Happy New Year! We're coming at you live, which is what in the business we call pre-recorded, from our childhood home in Cheltenham.
Yes, we are. That's right. We've been at our childhood home in Cheltenham doing lots of things.
Eating pickled onions.
And lots of those things are getting in the way of us releasing our next episode of Countries That Don't Exist Anymore.
That's what Christmas is all about.
It is. It's delaying the inevitable. Yeah. So we won't be releasing that episode until 2 weeks from when this is first released. But in the meantime, we've got
Good news, a secret special surprise for you.
That's right. This was first played to listeners of Patreon back in 2021. And this is, if you go back to Series 3, Episode 5, The Raj of Sarawak, this is like a special CTDEA movie club made about that subject.
What film, Ed?
Edge of the World, I hope.
So if you want to pause this now and go and watch Edge of the World for a few hours and then come back, feel free. Or you can simply just listen to it and then don't watch the movie at all, because you won't need to, because we'll give you all the information you require.
Yes, I mean, you're probably just doing washing up anyway, so what does it matter what we're saying? It's just a soundtrack. Just keeps the demons at bay.
That's true. Enjoy! And join us again in a couple of weeks when we're going to be covering the Zulu Empire. Woo! Can't wait. And do another movie club therein. If you'd be so kind to give us a nice present for 2024, that would be going and leaving a review. We do appreciate them, and they help with exposure of the show. Let's get going in the movie club, and it's
Edge of the World.
God, that was a pretty easy recording.
No, I know. I don't know all those little SOBs.
Yeah. Oh, shit, we're still recording.
Oh, no.
Countries that don't exist anymore. They used to exist, but not anymore. Now you know what this podcast is for. It's countries that don't exist anymore.
Hello, welcome to another edition of CTDEA Movie Night.
CTDEA Movie Night.
Movie Night. Yeah, so I hope you grab your slightly old historical popcorn. Sit down into a no longer allowed because it's politically incorrect leather chair with crocodile teeth inlay
and murdering crocodile teeth.
An imperial adventure. We decided to watch Edge of the World.
Edge of the World.
Edge of the World is relevant to us, of course, because it's based on the life, or supposedly based on the life, of James Brooke, the Raja of Sarawak, or Sarawak, and the founder
Sarawak, isn't it?
Of Sarawak, Sarawak is what it is. Sounds too British for me.
Sarawak.
Yeah, exactly. I just
it sounds like Chile.
Yeah, you're going on holiday to Sarawak.
Must go to Sarawak.
Sorry, how do you say it, locals? Sarawak. Oh, you mean Sarawak. Yeah. That's why I always called it Sarawak. Yeah. Because, you know why, Phil? Because I'm anti-imperialist. And guess who else is anti-imperialist?
James Brooke.
Now, if you listen to the episode, you'll know that he was pretty much anti-imperialist, despite basically being an imperialist on his own terms.
Yes.
That's what it was. It's not so much that he was anti-imperialist. It's more the fact that he just didn't like other people doing it.
Yeah.
And
he didn't like other people telling him what to do either.
Yeah, exactly. He hated other people telling him what to do. Yeah. You know, I understand that if James Brooke was around in this day and age, he would never have passed his driving test. just like me, he would just refuse to be told what to do.
I'm doing a parallel park.
Just furious. Don't tell me what to do.
Park this.
Countries that don't exist anymore.
Throughout the film, there's some quotes. There's like James Brooke quotes, except obviously they're just written for the movie.
Yeah.
But they all sound very cliched, and they start out insightful, I think, where he goes, "How long until they figure out that I'm a fraud?"
Exactly. And actually, during the whole thing, they did have these voiceovers of him saying, "How long till they figure out I'm a fraud?
Yeah.
You feel lucky, punk." And it's like, that's not what I imagine James Brooke to be.
It's Clint Eastwood, the imperialist.
From our episode. Considering that we looked at James Brooke's letters that he wrote back to his mum, where he was saying,
he's like, "Hello.
Mother, I've become a great man." Yeah. "Mother, I've become embroiled in a very obvious rip-off of Apocalypse Now," which we'll come to later,
we'll
by the way.
We'll have to come to that later. I think, in fairness, you can break the film up into two segments. Number one,
it really does switch, doesn't it? Like,
yeah. Number one is the kind of making of a virtuous king by mistake.
Yeah. And then the second one, it feels like they run out of ideas, so they just go, oh, he's in the jungle, yeah. Let's just do Apocalypse Now.
They literally do Apocalypse
That is
now.
Literally yeah. it. And, but it feels right, because they have those moments in the films where it becomes more, that voiceover becomes more and more Apocalypse Now.
Yeah.
But I like still quite early on, when I talked about, you know, they figure out until I'm a fraud, like James Brooke never thought he was a fraud.
No.
He didn't.
No.
He thought he was someone with something special yeah. that the world needed to know about.
At the time, we kind of slightly compared him to a sort of there was a pinch of L. Ron Hubbard.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that's the kind. He was definitely a delusional guy, and
yes.
wouldn't have had the internal insight to say I'm a fraud.
No,
he certainly wouldn't have had an imposter syndrome. I don't think.
No, not at all. No, he definitely was someone who shambled through it all.
Yeah.
But definitely believed in his own genius early on, the worst kind of young man.
Yep.
Because this film, it's just easier for this film to you know, give it that Braveheart treatment,
yeah.
give it that patriot treatment of it's got to be evil, in this case, evil British Empire. Mm. By the way, at the beginning of the film, they say the British Empire was governed half the world's peoples. And this was in 1840s, which it definitely did not. I don't think the British Empire ever governed half the world's peoples, ever.
No.
Maybe a third at most.
Yeah.
So that's nonsense. And then seemingly when there's this dinner party between the sort of British guests and the local dignitaries, they're like, well, we must make this place a crown colony. And their response is, you're already governed half the world. When will it ever be enough?
Yeah.
I'm just like, well, you've obviously got the same fake news about British governing half the world.
Yeah.
The height of the British Empire didn't happen until the 1920s. And that by that time, the British Empire was on its way out anyway. But I think we've quite well established, or hopefully we have anyway, that at this point, James Brooke was a divisive figure back in Britain, not because he was anti-imperialist, it's because half of the people thought he was an imperial hero.
Mm.
And those were the Tories, the Conservatives, the King and Country Conservatives, or the Queen and Country Conservatives. And the other half thought he was a evil indigenous person hating, you know. But these were the liberals.
Yeah.
And the liberals were not, they were in the business of trade and mercantilism and, you know, good old liberal capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
But they were in no sense, they were almost embarrassed by the idea of imperial possessions.
Yeah.
So we weren't in this peak imperial moment yet. Nothing like that. But I do like the fact that it sets up his hate for the Empire when he's like, the last time I just realised as I'm doing this, it just becomes sort of a bad impression of Piers Brosnan being James Bond. You know, it's like,
No, he's more like, James Bond.
Yeah, James Bond.
James Bond.
There was something of that.
The last time.
But he said, the last time I fought for Empire, the British left me for dead.
Mm.
And it's just like, well, hang on. Do you mean by left me for dead? Do you mean you were 22? You led a charge against some Indians. You got shot in the stomach because, of course, you did. And then they put you on a pension for life, which funded pretty much the rest of your exploits.
True. Although, I mean, obviously, there's a clear divergence there between the movie and life and what actually happened, or history, I should say.
Yeah. So.
And but yeah. So I think like. That's where it starts.
While we're on the subject of the British Empire, that seems to be the whole thing. And the whole thing in this thing that James Brooke seems to be fighting the whole time. He comes out as anti-British. He's saying, they call them savages, but I've seen what the British do to the Indians. And it's the idea of them strapping Indians to cannons. That's what they specifically mention, even though it's about 20 years before that was really a prominent thing during the Indian Mutiny, and that became famous, at least. I'm not saying that didn't happen before, but I think it was famous during the Indian Mutiny.
Yeah.
So that's what he was referring to, or seemed to be. So also bullshit. Oh, by the way, in case you're wondering why James Brooke came to this place, they say, we're observers from the Royal Geographical Society because we love a bit of exposition.
Yeah.
That's very important.
Yeah. In fact, the only time they really mentioned about the kind of spoiled brat element of James Brooke, which comes across more in real life than it does in the film, is when they land and then they say, oh, you come here to waste your inheritance, have you?
Arthur Cruikshank. Who doesn't really... He doesn't appear in real life.
Okay.
They've invented a character to be the voice of reason,
yes.
I think.
But he kind of talked disparagingly about Brooke's inheritance when they arrive on shore. At that point, I was like, okay, this is sort of the Brooke that I know and love. You know, this guy who's got his inheritance.
He's got his inheritance and he's wasting it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's fair.
But then, but after that point, the character diverges. And again, actually, last movie we did, which was the Samurai, The Last of the Samurai, talking about this is like Samurai Dances with Wolves. And now this is a bit of a Sarawak Dances with Wolves where he kind of goes native and gets involved. And that seems to be going to be every film we watch, Ed?
It's sort of... Okay, here's the thing about... The problem with this film is... In order for us as a modern audience to like him, we have to establish that he's very anti-British Empire.
Yes.
Which I think Sir James Brooke was, but just in a really weird way.
Yeah.
Didn't really approve of British imperialism, but sort of... He went along with it because he was a product of his times and he took his knighthood from the Queen and whatever else. But at the same time, it feels in this film, he becomes a Raja.
Yeah.
So the only way they can explain that is that there's this guy called Makota, who does exist in the actual James Brooke story. We didn't really go into it. And the reason is he's always like on James Brooke's shoulder as like the evil guy or the bad prince who's against him.
Yeah.
But it's not really, you can sort of, you don't need to know the history of Sarawak to have him there. It's just he's more of a device in this film.
Yeah.
And obviously he becomes Colonel Kurtz in this film as an Apocalypse Now character.
Yeah.
But it's so weird. In order for a modern audience to like him and like James Brooke, we have to go, the only reason he became Raja was to stop that evil guy being horrible to a bunch of basically nice people.
Yeah.
And he's like, I guess I just have to do it.
Yeah.
And whereas in the as far as we can see, like James Brooke did actually have some sort of warped regard for his dyaks and whatever else, and sort of, you know, patronizing patriarchal view of his dyaks. But at the same time, he very much sort of decided he was going to be Raja. Whereas in this, he's kind of thrust into the role against his will. We were saying actually as we're watching this film, is this really based on the life of Sir James Brooke? Or are they just using James Brooke as a character from history to go, oh, look, we want to do a film about a hero and this guy will do.
Yeah.
Now, if it's the second thing, it's kind of a shame because they've missed out on such a brilliant film.
Yeah.
It could be like the Griswolds, you know, like the like National Lampoon's, like Borneo Vacation. Like they could have like Chevy Chase, a young Chevy Chase, basically taking an imperial trip and sort of becoming Raja and... You know, like it has everything.
Yeah.
Like Sarawak, the story of Sarawak is incredible. And it's the most amazing story about a delusional narcissist. And in this film, they turn him, they get Jonathan Rhys-Meyers to play the part as a bland hero.
Yes.
He's just a virtuous, bland hero who towards the end...
Yeah, he's not particularly complicated, is he?
No.
In the film. Like you say, they really could have exploited this... contradictory and complicated character that was James Brooke, which brings us on to, I think, a massive theme of the whole thing, which I was shocked by, which is, I'm going to call it straight washing.
Yeah.
So James Brooke, as everybody knows, and Nigel Barley pointed out in our second episode on the Raja Sarawak, was definitely gay. And this is everywhere. This is in the blackmail by newspapers. This is in his own accounts. This is in the people he used
well,
to
not,
hang out with.
Not, yeah, not in his own... Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it came through
yeah,
in his own accounts.
Oh, yeah,
he didn't, say, I'm a gay.
But. Yeah, he didn't exactly say, guess what, everybody? I bugger men and ships boys. No, of course he didn't. No, you're absolutely right. We have forever this thing in society where, you know, my parents will watch something... Even like 20 years ago, there'll be some TV show and they have to pretend there's some subtext that he's gay.
Yeah.
Why do they have to? It's just the fashionable thing to say that people are gay. Oh, yeah. Okay, and now we're in 2021.
Yeah. Surely, you can have a gay person.
The stories
who was actually gay.
Gay people from history,
yeah.
Of which there's going to be loads.
Yeah,
and you've got such a great story. I mean, okay, the only reason I can think of why they didn't dwell upon the fact, it would only make sense if they portrayed James Brooke as he really was, which was a total narcissist. Mm. Not the worst person ever, but a bad egg and just, you know, just not a, probably not a sort of great individual.
Yeah.
And so maybe in that respect, it just show he's not a gay hero.
Yeah.
He's kind of a gay anti-hero or something like that. But nevertheless, he's a gay man, as far as we can tell. And they completely forgotten about that. There was a little moment.
Oh, no, because my take on this is that this little moment was reinforcing and sort of it's sort of like a preemptive strike to say no, he's definitely not gay, because he was slightly come onto by the prince, and he said to the prince, "You're not the man I think you think I am," which I took was a pretty obvious thing to say. Oh, I'm not gay, in case any historically minded viewers are watching. Anyway, the point is that there's no reason for him not to be gay in the film.
Exactly.
And they decided that they were not going to not only not make him gay, but go out of their way to point out how straight he is.
Yes.
Why?
It seems really strange, because as Nigel Barley said, that's crucial to understanding the character, the burning character of James Brooke.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting as well, obviously in a time when it was verboten.
Yeah, and illegal.
And yet that could have been a much more interesting story.
Exactly, because I think the problem
we had, or at least I had with this story,
was
the whole time I was like, who are these people?
Yeah.
What's going on? Why do I care?
Who are you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What? Who? Now she's your lover? This person, Fatima, is your lover? Yeah. It's just like, you're into her? I don't think you're into her. You don't act like you are. No. Who's that person? Oh, your friends? Mm. Oh, they're playing music. That means it's sad. You know, that was the whole movie. It was just stuff happening.
Yeah.
And wait a minute. You've turned over 57 pages at once.
Yes.
I've missed the part of the story where you got me caring and then you're going to take me with you on a journey.
Yeah.
I didn't have any of that. And yet it's such a strange thing, because that's the problem with the film. It's so disjointed.
Yeah.
And it was just crying out for more interesting material. And it had it. It really had such interesting material. And it's almost like the whole film, I was like, is this really about Sir James Brooke? And then at the end, they're like, James Brooke did this. And then he was this. And then Charles Brooke took over. And it's like, oh, hang on. So it is about this legacy.
Why didn't you make the film about that?
So if it is about it, why not make it about
them? I know, yeah.
Because you didn't do that.
No, you didn't do that at all.
And here's the thing. If you've read the Nigel Barley books, or even if you go back and listen to our interview where we talked to him, there's so many interesting things in there. And I actually know, we were saying, did they read the book? And they have done.
Yeah.
Because there's details in there which are straight out of the book.
Yeah.
So, for example, the president of the US... sending James Brooke a telegram recognizing an independent Sarawak or Sarawak, however you
want to
say.
Was the crocodile in the book?
Yeah, there's the crocodile, the case of the crocodile, which in this one is used as some sort of clever King Solomon point that James makes, whereas in real life it wasn't that. It's just that he just went along with it. It's like, okay, yeah, let's try a crocodile. And then you have the Dyaks watching the Magic Lantern shows, which was in the film and was referred to in the books as well.
Mm-hmm.
And there's obviously the illness. The illness of James Brooke, which
takes up about 3 minutes of the
movie. Yeah, 3 minutes and doesn't really help things out. And also, actually, in the book or in the accounts and the diaries, he comes out of it and he looks withered and old and angry. Whereas in the film, he looks just about the same.
True, but I suppose in the film, at least it does change that. It does change his character from being sort of benevolent to violent, and then he goes on the rampage, and he does.
From what he says, that seems to be his moment where he goes full native.
Yeah. At some point, as Ed's been alluding to, let's get into it. It goes full Apocalypse Now.
Yes.
The way it's shot, the dialogue, the voiceovers, and he even puts on some black paint or mud on his face as he prepares to attack the would-be prince.
Then that's from the monologue, There's sort of the voiceover builds to this is just apocalypse now, isn't it? Like, so Dakota just takes on suddenly this almost like we are one and the same thing, and he's like, what's it? He came to me. He was always going to come to me. And then he's like,
he came to me.
I've been living. And he goes, I've been living in a fantasy of my own making. Yeah. And I'm like, now that is James Brooks' quote. Like, that's his life.
Yeah.
Now that is interesting.
Yeah.
But then, unfortunately, it gets less interesting because he carries on. He says, to rule the jungle, I must love the jungle. All of it. The beauty and the blood. He's not waiting for me to kill him. He's waiting for me to save him. Like, what? Why?
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 He's not waiting for me to kill him. He's waiting for me to save him.
They could have. Do you know who they should have got?
Steven Seagal?
Yes. Yes. Exactly. Steven Seagal sits down to play James Brooke. He's not going to get up. Exactly. He's not going to get up.
And so at the end, it goes, it really goes full, not full Metal Jacket, it goes full Apocalypse Now. And so they all attack the camp of Makota, and they surround him, and he seems powerless and helpless aboard this boat. And James Brooke turns up, caked in mud and looking mad.
Yeah.
He's gone full Martin Sheen on the whole situation, and pulls out a machete and then hacks down, and it's hopefully listeners you have seen the movie or going to, because the way it is shot is just, I mean, there should be some kind of litigation involved here. Like, it's a plagiarism Apocalypse Now, also in a story that doesn't need it to be put in.
No,
you know, it's almost like they're just going for the dollar. Countries that don't exist anymore. Oh, I want to mention Finchy turned up.
Yes, Finch.
Chris Finch.
Did.
What's Chris Finch's real name? Nobody knows. Anyway, Chris Finch from The Office. He turned up as a posh.
Yeah, like a major British Empire figure. He basically sums up the whole British Empire.
Yeah, in a character.
Arrogant.
Eats lots of bacon.
But he's like, this whole time, he's, well, Sarawak will be the next crown sovereign territory.
Except he doesn't say, he says, Sarawak will be the next crown sovereign territory. And his accent's slipping all over the place. Which makes me think, considering the amount of English actors in American movies who seem to get away with it these days because they're cheaper, you would think that one Englishman can play another Englishman and get an accent right. But whoever, the guy who plays Chris Finch, and you know, email in if you know who it is, I don't. His accent slips around so much that you can't believe he's from the same country.
Yeah.
Which goes to show, American listeners, English accents are very different depending on where you are in England.
Exactly.
Let me tell you.
It's not just the fact that Scottish people apparently can't do Irish accents. It's also the fact that English people can't do English accents.
Yes, yeah.
So there we go.
Specifically Yorkshire people. And I'm looking at you, Sean Bean, Goldeneye.
Yeah.
There's a line between Yorkshire and sort of posh boy received pronunciation English, which shall never be crossed.
Because the whole point it's shown here, the British Empire sort of comes in and they can only do one thing, which is to be avaricious and to want to consume the world. That's like their whole thing. So Sarawak in this film is made to be such an important place. Early in the film, it's all about whoever runs Sarawak wins the game.
Yeah.
And early on, they're like, there's two princes which are sort of trying to take each other out in one way or the other. So whoever rules Sarawak will be heir to the Sultan of Brunei. Mm. This is all guff. And then later on, of course, this Chris Finch character... He's like, well, we'll bring him back, marry him off, knight him, and then we'll have another colony. And they're like forever going on about how, you know, like the coal of Sarawak and all this stuff. And it's like, nobody wanted Sarawak.
Yeah.
That's the only reason James Brooke got it in the first place.
He wouldn't have been able to have it for that long.
It's the only reason that, I mean, like, they acknowledge the fact in the film that he's spent all his money on this colony.
Yeah.
But in this film, it's like, it's only because he's too kind to tax the people.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the only reason he's poor, is because he refuses to extract money from the colony, and he's not after gold. Whereas the real thing around it is because there wasn't any money to be had there. Mm. This was before the discovery of oil. I think the most valuable thing they had was antimony, mm-hmm. which was, you know, not, it was used in, I think, the armament industry and other stuff, but yeah. not very expensive and not very worthwhile. And certainly not, it's why no one rolled up. And it's certainly why the Sultan of Brunei never bothered to exploit it.
Yeah.
No one could be arsed with it. It was seen by most people as a swamp.
Mm.
Now, a swamp for people to live in, the, you know, for the people of the area, it was very valuable and, you know, useful in their home. But if we're talking about this great, dazzling possession,
the jewel in the crown,
that everyone's after, nobody's yeah. after it.
No.
That's what's kind of tragic about Raja James Brooke in real life, is it's nothing.
Yeah.
You're commander of the garden shed. You know, you're emperor of yeah. that bit of car park that no one wants.
Yeah.
That canal with the shopping trolleys in.
Yeah.
That's what it is. That's what Sarawak was. And this whole film is just like, British Empire, and we're shooting it up. Oh, we're just so greedy. It's just like, listen, the British Empire has done enough stuff
yeah.
without having to make up some other stuff. Like, there's no need. So much, so many crimes, so much avariciousness, but not at this point and not for those reasons.
Exactly. You know? They sort of turn this into a British colonial Avatar movie
yeah.
where Chris Finch plays the cigar-chomping general who wants to blow everything up and is like just this sort of amoral lunatic. At the end of watching this film that went from one thing in, went into a plagiarism of Apocalypse Now, they actually could have told the actual story of James Brooke. What a wasted opportunity.
Yes.
That's my take on it.
I think so. Because the thing is, it's almost like really an old-fashioned story they're telling. Yeah. It kind of reminds me of like a 1950s swashbuckling
mm-hmm.
movie.
Yeah.
That seems to be about a virtuous guy who wasn't really asking for it, but just through virtue of his own heroism, can't help but impress everybody he meets and just do the right thing constantly.
Yeah.
And it makes him boring.
It does, and quite two-dimensional.
But Jonathan Rhys-Meyers, even as that character, he's not very convincing because he can barely grow a beard, Phil.
I know.
He's just got bum fluff. He must be about 40.
Shit. It's like, who is he, me?
I know. He hasn't even got a beard. Well, he ain't got a beard. Also, I like very early on how, you know, he was in love with the person he met.
Yeah.
Because they had to make him do one Hugh Grant impression.
Yes.
Walking along. And he had that glitch. Like, it makes all public school boy yeah. English people basically androids
yeah.
who just have a programming error when yeah. they're with someone they fancy. They're walking like,
exactly.
They can't help it.
No, they're all on dial up at that point.
Boo, boo. I love you. Boo.
Countries that don't exist anymore.
So let's think of a good thing to say about the film, because yeah. I think we've been pretty...
Well, the one thing I liked about it is that evidently, according to the credits, it was actually shot there.
Mm.
And the atmosphere and the kind of the landscape to the place was actually really good.
Yeah.
I did enjoy that. I mean, later on, I think possibly shooting there or planning to shoot there is what contributed to descending into Apocalypse Now, because it just had that river going through a jungle feel.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely how I felt about it too. I think probably it was so great to see the landscape and the river systems. Yeah. And I'm sure that they've taken some trouble with the dyaks and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it is great in that respect to sort of put some dress to it and all that kind of with the Malays and stuff. Didn't really touch upon the Chinese, which I think was so strange.
Yeah.
Since, I mean, I think there was one character who was the kind of... They needed a sort of badass woman to be involved somehow.
Yeah.
So they loosely introduced a Chinese female character
yeah.
with the understanding, and this is actually quite funny early on, that James Brooke is basically James Bond.
Yes.
And he's had lots of adventures beforehand.
Yeah.
And he knows every language.
Yeah.
And all women fancy yeah. him. He just can't help himself.
Exactly. He's just like,
kids everywhere.
Exactly. He's like, oh, Mr. Brooke, do you still sleep with the pistol under your pillow?
No, it's a big penis. You know, it's like, he's just, exactly. he's just constantly James Bond. Like,
yeah.
they couldn't. And then, so yeah, you're right. So they had this this James Bond character because they had to think of something.
Yeah.
And then, as you say, they put him in this fantastic, you know, environs, Kuching, which I'm sure had like more going for it than literally one hut.
Yeah, it was a single hut on a river.
Yeah, like by the end, when you saw people flying the flags, it looked like there was more stuff there. Yeah. But for the most of the film, Kuching literally just seemed to be one large
wooden hut on a river. And I've not been there, but I'm imagining there's more to it.
It's probably more to it than that.
Yeah, even in those days.
So they had James Bond and they had all that stuff. And then by the end of it, as you say, they're like, well, we're in the jungle. I mean, he's gone native. It's apocalypse now, isn't it, mate?
Now.
It's apocalypse now, mate.
Exactly.
It's apocalypse now.
There's money in apocalypse now.
It's such a shame that they just had to, I don't know, cut and shut two films together with some cliches. When they had a really fascinating story to tell, which they didn't even try to touch on.
No.
Probably because they thought this rather strange story of this repressed homosexual narcissist won't be box office success.
Exactly.
But guess what? This wasn't box office success anyway.
Yeah, so why bother? What have you got to lose?
Yeah, they could have at least done something. Like, it was basically made for TV, this film.
Yeah.
So they could have at least told us a really interesting story, which, go on, fuck it. Raise some eyebrows.
Yeah.
Fleabag the shit out of this.
Exactly.
That would have been interesting.
Yeah, I mean, since you got that freedom anyway, and actually the production of the movie itself was quite good.
Yeah.
Why not?
I know.
And definitely, I reiterate to the producers of the movie, it's okay to have a gay character. Just want to make that clear.
Yeah, it's fine.
It's okay to be gay.
And not just the funny character.
Yeah, not just like, oh, exactly. Whoopsie.
Ooh. Oh, we need Mucky in this jungle.
Exactly.
You know.
You're allowed to have a three-dimensional, full, complicated human gay character. It's okay.
And he can be evil.
Yeah.
Or a bit evil.
Yeah.
Doesn't necessarily mean he has to be perverted fetishist Nazi. Doesn't need to be, it's a little one, no pressure. You don't have to be that either. So such good subject matter, such a real strange waste, and at the end, such a strange, like, oh yeah, this was about James Brooke after all. Look, here's his picture and stuff.
Here's his picture, and then here's some text on the screen to explain the rest of his life. Brilliant. Thanks,
also,
guys.
Isn't it weird, and maybe as a final thought for me, the whole time they were complaining about empire and civilizing and, oh, they call these people savages. What about what the British Empire did? They did all that stuff. But then at the end, they just go, James Brooke was ruled then. And then Charles Brooke was ruled then. And someone else ruled then. And you're like, turns out after all that it was fine. Like the Brooks were fine.
Yeah.
You kind of said they were fine at the end. So what you're doing is kind of endorsing empire, aren't you? Like these random folks who just come from the other end of the world.
Endorsing empire and
rule them
and
for 100
years. Condemning homosexuality. Well done, filmmakers.
Yeah, well done, filmmakers.
Yeah,
what year
legacy.
Do you think this is?
Yeah.
I don't know what film company made it, but probably they're probably like... Mm. Screw cancel culture.
Yeah,
or something like that.
Exactly.
Probably like some reaction.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
definitely. Countries that don't exist anymore. Well, I think that's a good summary of the film. Ed, I feel we should give it a score.
Oh, okay.
So, what are you going to give it?
I think I'm going to give it one Dayak canoe out of five. One Dayak canoe. Well, I think it might be a 2 out of 5.
Yeah.
But I think because I've called it a diet canoe, I think they're only single. I don't think you can have two holes next to each other. And unlike the film, I want to be as accurate as I possibly can about diet canoes. So therefore, I can only give it one.
Okay.
Yeah. How about you?
I'm going to go for 2 convicted crocodiles out of 5.
That's great.
Because I think that although it does depart radically from history, as all the films we watch do, despite that, I think that the way that actually it's shot and the feel of the movie is actually quite appealing, even though it's massively inaccurate and the characters don't make any sense. But I just like the fact that they went there, and it kept me interested. Basically, if I didn't know the story of James Brooke real life, I would have found it a 2 out of 5 movie. And that's why I'm rating it on that.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you, if you have the opportunity, you guys, you Patreon heroes,
yep,
why don't you watch the film?
Yeah.
You can either watch it, I believe, on Amazon Prime.
Yep.
You can steal it.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah, just get a torrent.
Just steal it.
Since we're not paid by any of them.
Yeah, save your money for our Patreon.
Yeah, save your money for our Patreon. In fact, yeah, all you have to do is steal the movie and then whatever money is left over, you can put into the Patreon.
No, don't steal the
movie. No, we're joking.
Oh, I don't care, actually. Yeah, you can do that.
I've got to put a dog in this race.
Get in touch.
And tell us what you think.
What you think about it, because that would be good, too. Because we are, you know, on CTDEA Movie Club, we're not experts.
No.
We don't know a damn thing about movies. No. So why don't you let us know what you think?
Yeah.
Or if you have any suggestions for other historical movies you want us to watch. To watch as part of the movie club.
Especially, actually, if there are any movies that are related to any of the episodes you've heard so far in the whole history of countries that don't exist anymore, then get in touch. And there are
plenty.
Yeah. Plenty knocking around. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Get in touch. Think of the Typing Rebellion.
Yep.
There's a lot.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's loads. So, and Garibaldi, he'll be all over him.
Yep.
So get in touch. Let us know what you want to hear about, and I'm sure we'll have plenty more CTDA movie nights in
movie
future.
Night. Countries that don't exist anymore. Well, that's the end of this CTDA movie club, and thank you so much, patrons, for your continued support. We appreciate it enormously.
Yes, and there's a little announcement for you guys. When we take a break between Series 3 and Series 4, we'll turn off stealing money out of your accounts.
Yeah.
Because we're only going to, you know, as we produce the show, we'll be doing that. Yeah. But we still will be doing one episode a month, a sort of roundtable, loose discussion-based program. So that's free.
You get that free. That's free.
Put your money away.
Get
that to take it home. Yeah. And in the meantime, we'll be getting ready for the next series. At that point, I will turn on the slush fund button and your very generous donations will then start sprinkling back in to the very highly depleted CTDEA coffers.
Yes.
For that, we are eternally grateful.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And remember, to
keep existing,
to keep watching and movies,
keep watching movies, and tell your friends
to keep watching movies
with us also.
Historical movies.
Also.
Countries that don't exist anymore. They used to exist, but not anymore. Now you know what this podcast is for. It's countries that don't exist.